Hope everyone's having a great week today. This is Kurt Morrison. This is our weekly Persuasion Motivation Influence Call. And this is where we're going to spend some time together talking about an actual tool you can use this week, give you some follow-up information, take your questions about what we talked about today, and, of course, things that you're running into, the goal being, of course, a new tool. What I want to focus on over the next couple of weeks is ways that you can maximize your influence when you don't have the power, position, or authority. What I mean is sometimes when you negotiate with a bank or you're trying to influence in the workplace or influence your boss, a lot of times we feel that we don't have the power or authority or ways to influence. And I want to show you ways where you can actually influence without authority, without that position, without that power. Because sometimes when you approach a home or approach a banker or approach somebody with a home-based business, a lot of times we feel like equals. We don't feel like we have the authority. We don't feel like we have the expertise. We don't feel like we have any grounds to negotiate. And you have a lot more power than you think. That's what I want to focus on, is you have a lot more power and authority than you think. So let's get you a tool today that will really help you out when you feel you're in a position where you don't have a lot of pull or a lot of power to persuade and influence. The goal is to learn how to convince people when you're not in charge, how to persuade others when you're not in the right position, how to lead when you're not the boss, how to influence when you don't have any authority, and how to win when you're not the coach. And, of course, how to negotiate when sometimes you're not included. What I want to focus on is the art and science of social pressure. We find through research, and you know this to be true about human nature, that most of the time, people will believe other people before they believe you. Most of the time, well, I guess let me ask you this. Why do you think they always will believe somebody else before they believe you?
They know you.
They either know you, and you sometimes can't be a prophet in your own land, if you've heard that terminology before. What's another reason?
They don't think you're credible.
Yeah, they don't think you're credible. And you have something to gain, don't you? For the most part, probably the business interaction, you have something to gain. And we have something to gain, a lot of times we become very skeptical and we push away. So humans are social creatures and follow social pressure. In fact, 95% of us will usually do or usually follow the social norm. The other 5%, they're probably teenagers, and that's a whole other scenario. But we're talking about the majority of people. The goal here is to let other people apply the pressure. Let other people be the expert. That's okay. Because they're used to giving you internal resistance, especially if you're trying to influence your boss. They might resist you because they're the boss, and they're supposed to have the good ideas, and maybe you haven't had the best ideas in the past, or whatever it is, they tend to push back a little. So let's talk about ways to use that social norm, that social pressure, that social validation to your benefit in every aspect of influence. The greater number of people who find any idea correct, the more the idea will be correct in their mind. And we, as humans, will change our opinions and behaviors consistent with the social norm. We all have a desire to belong. We have a desire to validate what we're doing is right. This is how we decide what is correct behavior. So if you're trying to convince someone to upgrade to new computer software, you could have all the facts and theories in the world, but if you show them the other top 10 companies that have already done it, that's probably all you need. We have that proof, that validation, when others are doing what we want to do or have the results that we want. And we've learned as children that we make fewer mistakes when we follow the social norm. Especially, I mean, if you go to a party, you're not sure how to act or what to do, you look around. Advertisers love this law. Testimonials, the fastest growing, largest seller. Think about the movies that you go to, the restaurants you go to. A lot of that is social validation. So that social validation compels us to change our behaviors, our attitudes, our opinions, the products that we use, and the media is telling us what we should wear and how we should smell and what we should do. And a lot of times we think it's a social norm. It might not even be the social norm. We seek after social norms to help us know what we should be doing or feeling or act or dress. And that's kind of an unwritten rule sometimes, as far as maybe raising our hands to speak or tipping in a restaurant or putting our shoes on somebody's table. Sometimes these are written, sometimes these are unwritten. But let's talk about some examples and think about how to adapt these to what you are doing. Social validation could be anywhere from donation plates you see at churches where they put a few bills in ahead of time just to what they call salt the tip jar. You'll see this with someone playing the guitar on the street, or if you're going on a tour in a bus and they leave a little can up there with some dollar bills on it, that's social validation. Even standing ovations, that's social validation. I was visiting my publisher in New York, and, you know, you go see a Broadway show, and this show had won all the awards. That's social validation. And I went to this show, and we had pretty good seats, and about halfway through, I'm like, I don't get it. I want to go home. I just didn't understand it. And usually I like Broadway shows, but this one was like, no. And I thought, well, maybe we better go. And I think, no, I won all the awards. Everyone else is staying. Maybe it's going to get better. So I stayed. So it was halftime or whatever. Okay, intermission. So you where my brain's at. So it was intermission, and I was just trying to figure out what's going on. And it didn't get any better. I wanted to leave, but I stayed there. But I could tell it was coming to an end, and I looked to the left and to the right, and I saw these people going down the stairs at the end of the show. I thought that was kind of strange. But right when that show ended, every single one of those people that came in and sat down in different spots, some even sat on the stairs, they all stood up and started clapping. What did everyone else do? They stood up and started clapping. What did I do? Okay. I stood up and started clapping. Before I even could think about it, I'm sitting there clapping going, this stunk. I hated this thing. But they got a standing ovation out of me. That's sometimes how it happens. Even in like video or DVD stores, when they, let's put it this way, they would follow people into the store and they would go to the return bin to find out what people had been watching, and a lot of times they would pull the ones out of there because if they're in the return bin and someone else had rented them, they must be good. And so they would take the older movies like Attack of the Killer Tomatoes or and mix them in there, and people would rent them and they would make more money. Even, internet downloads. When they, if there's like top 100 downloads and they take number 100 and make it number one, it stays at number one because if most people are doing it, it must be good. So you need to take a look at your product, your service, or idea, or your area. How are you the best? How are you the fastest selling? Go a long way to help people out. As you influence other people without authority, if other people are doing it, or other people recommend it, or other departments recommend it, you're borrowing that authority, you're borrowing that influence through social validation. Ones, too, we've seen bookstores, when you go in, the first thing you see is the bestsellers, New York Times bestsellers, or Oprah recommends it. That increases sales. Amazon has their top list, too. We talked about donation plates and standing ovations. All that is social validation. And you'll see this quite a bit on the Internet, where they'll have, okay, it's, say, $29.95 a month, or it's $330 a year. And so your choice is to do it by the month or do it by the year. And when people put a little arrow there and it says this is our most popular option by the expensive one, that's enough for a lot of people to do it. If that's the most popular option, that's important, and they do it. I'm sure you've been to a restaurant before, and you were the only one in that restaurant. So you walked in, you were hungry, you were excited to eat there, and all of a sudden you're the only person in that whole restaurant at lunchtime. How does that make you feel? Out of place. Like, I don't know about this. And it's a little nerve-wracking. You don't want to be the only one there. And if that restaurant owner knows anything about business, where are they going to make you sit?
The front.
In the front or by the window, that is social validation. Creating lines at you know, a rock club or a bar sometimes creates a lot of social validation that creates scarcity too. That is what you're looking for. Social validation. Even with blood drives. Now, it's ironic that very few people give blood. It saves lives, but the needle tends to make some people hesitate. But what they did is when they asked people to give blood, they exposed people to 38 different photos on a poster of other people donating blood. That's all they did. It was the only difference between asking them to give blood and then asking them to give blood with pictures of people giving blood. Just by showing the pictures, that social validation increased the chance of the people giving blood by 17%. 17%. When you walk into a Saturn dealership, for example, or any car dealership, they have pictures, Polaroids, of all the happy new car owners. That is social validation. Social validation is critical for what you are doing. Other aspects we need to talk about is using testimonials. You look at infomercials. Infomercials have a 90% failure rate. 90%. That's huge. When that fails, they take them back to the cutting room and they add testimonials. And sometimes they'll add testimonials with people who have no teeth or just don't look that sharp. Why would they do that? Anybody know why they would put somebody in there? They're like, really?
Because if they can do it, anybody can do it.
Exactly. It's not only a form of social validation, but it's a validation like, well, wait a minute. If they can do that without any teeth or whatever it is, I can do this. So you need to borrow validation, borrow credibility. We've talked about this before, through testimonials. Get other people to recommend you, to endorse you, to tell them that you can do this, make more money, save them money, save their home, that you're a great resource. Whatever it is, borrow testimonials. And if you're getting into a new industry, you can still borrow credibility and social validation from other industries. As the people you've worked with before, have them write a glowing testimony about how you're great to work with and dependable and honest. Whatever it is, testimonials are powerful. I know it's a sad thing, but we'll always believe testimonials more than we will you, because you have something to gain. And you can never have too many testimonials. Ask people for them. It will really help in your social validation. Another thing we see is called bystander apathy. This is part, I guess, the dark side of social validation, where our sense of social pressure is lessened when there's a large group of people. And sometimes we feel that those people are more capable of helping than we are. When people are moving a couch, sometimes we don't tend to try as hard. That's bystander apathy. Also, it's called diffusion of responsibility, where we're not sure it's what we're responsible for, if we should even help. If someone's in a park having a heart attack and people are walking by, sometimes we'll walk by and we'll not sure if we should help. No one else is. That's bystander apathy. In fact, a study was done with college students, and they had them in this room taking a test. And so they had one person in that room. They started pumping smoke underneath the door to see if people would alert somebody or go get help. And when there was one person in the room, 70% of the time, well, what happened to the other 30, but 70% of the time they went to get help. But if there were three people in the room, two were Confederates, that means they were in on the study and only they were testing the one, only 38% of the time do they get help. Because a lot of times, well, if they're not going to get help, it must not be that big of a deal. In fact, that happened in a famous story in New York City with the Catherine Genovese. I don't know if you heard that story before, but she was attacked repeatedly in this alley for hours. And these lights would come on, and the attacker would run away, and it would come back and would attack her some more. And she'd scream, the lights would come on, attacker would run away and come back, and eventually, and on a sad note, actually killed her. 38 people heard her screams, heard her cries. Not one called the police. And people are like, oh, those New Yorkers are New Yorkers. But the reality is, understanding bystander apathy, what do you think really happened?
Everybody thought somebody else did it.
Exactly. Everybody thought somebody else would do it. So in a large group or in a board meeting or we talk about groupthink where nobody wanted to take responsibility or being afraid to make a mistake, a lot of times we'll see this bystander apathy, and you probably attempt to influence one-on-one when you see this happening. Because it's easy to get stuck in the group. I mean, the way we react at a concert or a football game with the large group is very different than how we would act or react one-on-one. We also see that what's called de-individuation, where in a group setting, we tend to be more anonymous and less responsible and pretty much less self-aware. They did a study in Seattle with trick-or-treaters where they would knock on the door, they'd say, trick-or-treat, and the person, oh, here's the candy, and the phone would ring, and they'd leave, oh, just take one piece, and would walk away. They wanted to see if these kids would steal. And when the trick-or-treater was by themselves, only 7.5% of the time would they steal. But when they're in a group, as you know, it was almost 21% would steal. So sometimes in a group setting, things get strange. You would always want to attempt to influence one-on-one if you can. It's not always possible. But influence is always easier one-on-one than it is in a group situation because of de-individuation and a lot of times that bystander apathy. So as we maximize your influence in situations where you don't feel like you have a lot of authority, like they have all the cards, or you want to influence up the ladder at the workplace, social validation is easier. Social validation is easy because you're borrowing credibility from others. Other people are recommending it. Maybe you have something to gain, or maybe you have a past history or relationship there, or maybe they're the boss. And again, there's ego involved there. They're the boss. It should be their idea. They should come up with those things. Sometimes that's an issue. We have to persuade and influence with the cards that we're given. So what I want you to do, what I want you to work on, I want you to start thinking about what social proof do you need. So as you look at your idea, your product, your service, whatever it is, how can you provide social proof letting other people know that this is what the normal decision is? This is the standard. In fact, in real estate negotiation, one of the things that we teach is just by putting standard contract on the top of your contract increases their ability to accept it because it's the standard. That is a powerful word. Well, here's our standard pricing. Here's what we normally offer. This is what most people do. That's borrowing from the social norm. So is your idea, your product or service, is it popular? The most popular? Is it the best selling? Is it the trend? Is it the high demand? Is it the norm and the industry standard? Are you the best selling person in north, southwestern Henderson, Nevada in the small area? Are you the best? And you can make it really small if you want because that's going to be going after your demographic, but how can you be the best or the most popular or the fastest selling or the social norm with what you are doing? That's what I want you to focus on this week is just think about that. Whether you're selling a product on the internet or talking to somebody at the door or doing a negotiation, this always can be applied. And also it can be applied in the workplace. In the workplace, you can influence and get those results when you don't feel like you have that power or position. If you want a little more information on social validation, I'm going to start recommending CDs you can listen to the materials that you have. In the Magnetic Persuasion Manual and Magnetic Persuasion CDs, there is a law called social validation. If you feel it's an area you really want to work on and get a little more information on, that's a CD I would recommend. It's called the Lowest Law of Social Validation. You can either read it or listen to it. You will have both options. Any questions about what we talked about today?
I have a question.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I understood. This is Gretchen from Dallas. I'm not sure I completely understood. Did you say it's easier to influence one-on-one?
Absolutely.
Then.
No, it's not good time management. If I had 100 people, I could get 20 influence 20 people, but if I influenced 100 one-on-one, I'd probably have I was able to influence. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but if you are thinking about the group dynamics and the individual, I can't pronounce it exactly, but basically what I call the herd mentality, if your persuasion is good, like yours would be, wouldn't it be easier to take advantage of that herd mentality?
Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks for bringing that up, is that, you know, if the audience, if most of the audience is on your side, and there's that energy and that enthusiasm in the room, it could help you out. But even as a persuader in a room, getting 20 to 30% of the room to be persuaded is an incredible number. And so a lot of them would run to the back of the room or do some other things. But I guess what I'm pointing out is that a great feeling to have, and it's really good. But if I was able to sit down one-on-one with each one of those people in the audience, I'd probably have a better time persuading them. I wouldn't have that energy or that herd mentality. I mean, if you had 100 people in the room and 99 were on your side and were going to do it, I'd rather have that situation for that one person I was trying to persuade, because chances are they're going to do it. They're going to be persuaded.
Okay.
I guess it would depend on the situation and how emotionally involved the audience is and how many people are on your side. I guess I'm more used to a skeptical audience that's like, wait a minute, that's got something to gain. Especially if you're up, you know, I'll get a phone call where somebody will give me 90 minutes to persuade a strange audience to buy, you know, CDs and DVDs, things like that. That's not always your friendliest of audiences.
Thank you for clearing that up.
You bet. Any other questions? Anybody? Questions about what we talked about today or things you're even running into?
Hey, Kirk?
Yeah.
I got a question for you.
Yeah, go.
I know you're not a dating coach, but when it comes to asking out, in my case, a hot-looking gal, and it seems like whenever I would ask, whenever I would say, you know, would you like to go out, she either says, I got a boyfriend, or she'd say, I'm not interested, or I'm seeing, she'd try to make up some phony baloney excuse. So how can I persuade her to, like, that she should go out with me?
Wow, the question of the year. Now, a lot of persuasion can be used in those type of the situations, obviously. In fact, when my first book, Max Influence, came out, I think it was Black Man Magazine said, you've got to have this book because you can get any girl you want. I don't know how true that is. But part of it, I mean, if she has you have to understand, if she has a boyfriend and it's not in the cards, it's going to be very difficult to influence. If that's just a lie and a knee-jerk reaction, that changes things around, too. The scarcity thing will help you out, too, when... Especially, it's a hard thing for guys when they look too eager, too anxious, wanting it too much. That kind of has the opposite effect many times.
Yep.
And so that's one, the scarcity, too. Go out there is try to formulate your questions and your conversation to the point to where you want her to ask you out, or you want her to say, hey, is that offer still on the table? And I think that's what we kind of focus on, a little scarcity, even social validation. A little social validation there as far as people going out to, people having fun to, people that went out with you. The best thing you could do, if you knew one of her good friends and you went out with them and they told her, hey, I went out with so-and-so last night, it was incredible, it was so much fun, would be worth a lot to you. And I don't know if you could pull that off, but that would definitely work.
Can I give a girl's point of view?
You bet.
If it were me, and I've been in a situation where I've had guys ask me out that I wanted to have ask me out, and guys ask me out that I really didn't want them to ask me out. Mm-hmm. If she has any feelings at all for you, and she hasn't given you what you want to this point, be a friend, but just don't be around enough. Let her miss your presence. Create a vacuum.
That's scarcity. Right, that if you're around so much, that scarcity. Go ahead.
My question with you would be: what if she's like sort of far away, and should you basically be absent? After asking her, would you go out with me, or should you do it before? Because how would she know?
I'm sorry.
In other words, you were saying like you know, like the whole thing, absence makes our heart grow fonder. Should you
if
should
there's
you use
fondness
it?
Already?
Right. If this provide this fondness already, now do you you know, should you ask her out first and then create the fondness, or should you create the fondness and then ask her out?
Well, it kind of depends on how well you know her. But let's say you ask her out and she comes up with an excuse, just look at her and say, you know, I totally understand, and then be gone.
Okay.
Let her see you having fun with other people, mm-hmm. and, you know, just treat her like a casual friend, like you really couldn't care less.
Okay.
And if it's a girl that you have never met or never asked out, I would say if you're going out for the evening, look in the mirror and make sure you look like somebody you would go out with, or is there something there that doesn't look right? And give yourself a good talking to in that mirror. Pump yourself up before you go out the door.
All right, all good tips from some great persuaders. And I think the one point I want to hit on is there has to be a desire there, or a want, or a need. And sometimes we don't know with the opposite sex if they're interested or not. But this is true with any type of persuasion. If I'm selling ski passes at a retirement community, you know, I could be really persistent and really enthusiastic and have great benefits and a great deal, but they would never use it, so I'd be wasting my time. And that's kind of hard to understand in relationships sometimes, but that's also a factor in any aspect of persuasion.
Yeah.
Any other questions? All right. Now, if you want the recordings, we'll post those. Give us 24 hours at recording.advancedinfluence.com.
Could you repeat that?
You bet. recording.advancedinfluence.com. You'll have an option to download an MP3 or just dial up a phone number and listen to it. If you want to review it, that's going to be a high content sometimes. If you want to review it or download it and listen to it again, it'll sink in that much better.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Everyone, thanks, have an incredible week. You're so welcome. Go out there and persuade with power. And we'll
okay, thanks,
next
Kurt.
Week.
Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Night.